Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Nintendo Entertainment Podcast. I am Triforce Todd, and joining me today is Wario Will.
Have I ever told you how the RNG gods have blessed me today? And of course, gotta celebrate the Fire Emblem DLCs. Ah, my bae, Dorja!
Will. Tell us, Tyler, save us from Will.
No, I'm pretty depressed. It's been a rough day for me and multiple angles. I did lose 80 orbs for nothing, Fire Emblem Heroes. And as a big sports fan, it's been a rough day for both my Red Sox and Sixers. So it's Will's pouring salt in the wound.
Yeah, I, on the other hand, am doing pretty good today, so ha. All right, we got a lot of fun things to talk about tonight, so we're going to get started with what have you been playing? I'll get started. Obviously, been playing Fire Emblem Heroes, because the Tempest Trials just finished up the other day. I swear, sometimes I don't know how I make it to 100,000, and yet I do.
Don't really get how people can... I mean, how do you really spend... great focus on that thing using stamina potions all the time, but how the hell can people always max it out? Or is it just pure dedication?
I just do it. I mean, it's 14 days.
Yeah.
So let's see. 20. Okay, those 20 days, that'd be 5,000 a day. So you need between 7 and 8,000 a day. Two of them. I had 20% bonus.
Right,
I didn't upgrade to Rome. Right. I just didn't. I used Olivia, which was actually surprisingly good. So let's see. That's 20%. So I was getting about 1,300 for the first two bonuses. So that's 2,600. And then I would get around, 490 something, 450 something every round. So 100 divided by 5. That's 20. So that's 5 ones every stamina potion. That's 2,500. So do that, 3 times. Plus the bonuses, and you get it pretty easily.
Yeah, it's auto battle's your best friend too. I really slacked on this one. I usually get it done really fast and try to build up all my orbs. I think I was like 30,000 away in the last 2 days, and I just was like, okay, I'm just gonna leave my phone next to me, auto battle on, and just let it do it for me. And you get there. You get there pretty quick. As long as you play it every day, those big bonuses that you get will pull you through. The first two rounds, you get those gigantic bonuses, especially
right,
if you have that 40%.
Yeah, the times bonus, right. Mm.
So anyway, I got it, and I got all my orbs, which, unlike some people I know, I did not go for the Legendary Band, not just because I didn't really care, because I know that Thracia 776 is coming, but it's just, I really didn't care, because the legend, I'm doing the quotation marks with my hands, legendary character is the female version of Fel Dragon Grima. okay, sure, I suppose. And then the rest of the legendary characters I either didn't want, didn't need, or I knew I had no chance of getting in, one round, like somebody. I only wanted Brave Lynn and Brave Lucina. So I went for Lynn, I didn't get her, and now I have, 180 orbs waiting for Thracia. So I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a it's a good legendary banner for the side characters, but Fel Robin was really, really disappointing. Like, I was planning on, I didn't really follow through as much as I wanted to, but I was hoping to get a huge pile of orbs stocked up for this banner because I figured I would really want the legendary hero. I missed Gunther, and it haunts me every day. but unfortunately, really, that it Fel Robin, like, we already have, this is the sixth Robin in the game, as Will sent us a nice picture of Robin from Batman and Robin, just with Robin's face everywhere.
Wait, are you saying that Robin had Robin's face?
Yeah, because, and all the different forms of Robin, it's too much, it's way too
Wait,
much
which
Robin?
Robin or Robin Robin? Because, I mean, if you're not saying it right, you're just robbing us of the pleasure of this.
That's a good point. We really just need some sort of, like, I don't know. Like, we got a Frame, that was great. We got Ike, that was great. Krom was a legendary hero. We need to get legendary heroes from, Fjorm and Gunther. We need legendary heroes from each game. So I wish they would have done, like, the seven hero, or Marth. I'm really waiting for it. Marth's going to be a legendary hero at some point.
Like, you know, it's funny, you mentioned this, I think it was like a tweet or something, and it was like, you know, Crom's got 4 forms, Robin's got 6 forms, Ephraim and Elise, you have 2 different, Erica have 2 different forms, and Marth is just standing there in 1 form.
Yeah, it's weird. And Kata, Sita has.
Yeah, Sita's 3. Forms.
Like, oh yeah, 3 now. Yeah, so it's ridiculous.
Yeah, that is kind of ridiculous. So.
Actually, she only has 2. She only has 2.
Right, Bride and Regular. Sorry, but yeah, that's the thing. And then I played and reviewed. Hear that, Tyler? Played and reviewed.
What?
I got Batman: The Enemy Within, the final episode, same Stitch. This one's interesting because Telltale Games have always said that, you know, your choices define you, and to an extent they do. But unlike, say, like Mass Effect, which clearly had, you know, again, except for the third one, because the third one doesn't count. You know, that one had like clear impact. You know, you kind of know where the story is going. Where Telltale actually went out of their way to say, we are not doing that for this season with this ending episode. Joker is alive, or I can't say that. Joker has arrived, that's better. And he's either a vigilante, that's a scary thought, or a villain, depending on what you chose between episode 1 and episode 4 of this season. And so it's vastly different. There are only 3 shared scenes in the entire, I'd say like hour 40 minutes, depending on how you play it. It's very compelling. Like, I, naturally, being the epic good guy who would never put down anyone, ever. Shut up, Will.
For me, I'm too busy to write a review.
Yeah. But anyway, like, I chose to make Joker a vigilante, and I did like everything in my power to keep him that way, and it didn't work out. But, you know, like, the journey to get to that point was great. And for anyone who knows the deep lore between Batman and Joker, there's this scene which I swear is not only like straight out of comic books, but it's like that impactful, and it's great stuff. So I highly recommend it. I'm probably gonna replay the whole season just so I could go get the villain ending.
Like, I actually kind of spoiled myself on both sides, and yeah, that last scene with Joker, yeah that pretty much kind of like really is pretty much the pinnacle of that relationship between Batman and Joker in the universe as well. In Telltale, well, I don't know, it feels like it's kind of a good representation of like that, the relationship between those two. Even if you are reading the comics or in Telltale Games,
I would say it's this universe, just because in my take, Bruce really believed that John Doe, who's Joker, was his friend. And there's this scene, this is a spoiler alert, so if you want to skip ahead like, you know, a minute or so, go ahead. There's a scene where Joker is beaten, he's got a battering in his hand. And he's like, were we ever really friends?
Yes.
Yes, John, of course you were my friend. And he goes, dude, that's crazy.
Exactly. Right.
And that's great.
Right.
You know, but in the comics, Batman would never say that to Joker. He would never say, you were my friend. He hates the Joker for what he's done. But in our version, where we literally made the Joker what we wanted him to be, I can say that because I believe that is, you know, unhinged as he clearly was, he was my friend. So.
It's so weird that just the thought of a Batman game where Batman cannot be a good guy. Like, I would be like you, Todd. I would automatically do every good thing as Batman because, you know, Batman.
No, I understand that entirely. And that's actually the beauty of The Enemy Within, which is what the title of the series was that you really get to form your Batman. Like, here's another spoiler. So, again, skip ahead if you don't want it. Catwoman. Obviously, Batman's love interest for, you know, infinite amount of times, and, you know, they're about to get married in the comics. Maybe. And so, there's a scene where you have to betray Catwoman, technically, and I did to preserve the mission of the season, and then she gets co-opted into the Suicide Squad, and she's ticked, okay? She's like, you left me to die, and I'm like, I said the lie, like, I expected you to escape, I knew you would, and, you know, and she goes, oh, small comfort. And then there's a line where you actually could, you know, try and save her, but I didn't because of how I felt the story would go. And then I never got a chance to save her again, so she's still in the Suicide Squad, and I'm like, yeah, we're not getting together. Nope. Nope. That is one of the beauties of this series, is that whereas writers will always craft Batman to be one way, you know, I am vengeance, I am the night, blah, 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 blah. You know, this one is you get to decide how good or how bad your Batman is, and I find that very appealing.
Wait, so is it Bruce Wayne in the game?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's Bruce.
Yeah, see, if it wasn't Bruce, maybe I could do it, but it's Bruce. But so I would have to be like, I think it's really cool. You're selling me on the game. I want to check it out. How much of it's out on Switch right now?
The first season's out, I believe, it's like $20.
Season one is out. I wouldn't be surprised if season two came in the next few months.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I really want to check it out. You've sold me on it.
It's good stuff. I mean, not everything works, but you know, that's just the way gaming is nowadays.
And
but,
how Telltale kind of works, given the engine.
Yeah, and of course, how you craft your story will determine, you know, how you feel about the ending. I felt very happy with the ending, and then they teased season three. So
Yes.
I look forward to seeing how that goes. So, but that is what I have been playing, which is much better than last week where I didn't even talk about it. So, there you go.
Yes, I'll be jumping in today. So, so if you can't tell from my beginning monologue, the RNG gods have been quite kind to me as I pulled from the legendary banners two full summon sessions and I got a total of 4 5-stars. As I'm not sure what was already told already, I forgot. But basically, I pulled a Bravelin, Flying Naui, Summer Tiki, and Nekomata Sakura, which I don't know. I feel. The day was basically, I woke in the morning, okay, it's a legendary event, I might as well go try summon. Okay, and I got my orbs, I got Graze, I was hoping maybe try to go for a Faux Dragon Robin. But, because Faux Dragon Robin is the only first gray dragon, I believe, because no other one else is, I know there's, like, the red, blue, and greens, but no one else is a gray dragon, technically, right? In the universe right
now?
Yeah,
she's the first.
But then, put my sessions, and I'm like, hey, first summon, Bravelin. All right, go for my red. Got Flying Naui, what? And then go for green. Summer Tiki is like, wow, 3 5-stars. I was kind of hoping to get that really 1% chance, or less than 1% chance of getting all 5 stars.
Yeah.
But... that was what I was hoping for, but unfortunately, the fates were not kind. I got Olivia and Long Q. But then, like, okay, I'll take it. Three out of five ain't bad.
We have this great tradition of screenshotting every time we get a 5-star we're excited about. And you can always tell how excited you are based on, like, is the stars and quote up in the picture, or is it just the stars appearing, or is it just the silhouette of the character?
Yeah, so just for authenticity's sake, yes. Just also to say, until someone thinks my pictures are fake or doctored. So, as soon as, the stars pop up, I just okay, screenshot. So you can't say I did not Photoshop this whatsoever. So, yeah. So, and after that, later on in the day, I just put another session on the banner. It's wow, Nekomata Sakura. Okay, I'll take it. 4 out of 4 or 5 stars in 2 sessions. I'll take it. So... Hopefully this luck will continue with my rabbit luck. And please hurry up, please, Kakuna, come home, please, thank you. Okay, but joking aside. And also what I've been recently playing as well is the new DLC for Fire Emblem Warriors. Yeah, I would have thought I'd actually go back to that game. And if anyone has not already known already, the Awakening DLC for Fire Emblem Warriors is currently out, which currently involves Olivia, Owain, and of course my bae, Darja. And I'll let everyone here know right now, because previous last podcast we discussed, it was possibly that these characters were more or less clone characters. I only was able to try out Darja, but I can tell you right now, Darja is, I believe, is a semi-clone of Robin. Because, yes, she does have Elfire, Elwynn, and Doran like Robin, but the thing that separates her from Robin is her dark magic in her, finishing moves, strong moves, her... the fourth combo, fifth combo, she has dark moves that actually is...
Hold
on,
so the fourth one, she creates she turns around and creates a dark sphere.
Yes.
Robin
yes.
has that too.
Oh, that's
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then the fifth or the next one is like she rises up and like or like stuff falls from the sky.
I think, yeah.
And like it's like calms. I think she's actually just a straight clone of Robin.
Okay. It's been a while since they played Robin, so I don't remember quite clearly. So, okay. So, I don't know. It feels, I don't know. Like, Darjo definitely plays, yes, definitely similar to Robin, but I feel like just, and just barely enough that it was, like, differentiate itself enough. I don't know. Again, I haven't played Robin a long time, so I can't recall. So don't quote me on that. And yeah, actually playing Olivia, and like Ty describes Azora as type described Azora in her character style. Olivia, she is fun to play. I don't know what is it about Koa Tecmo and Fire Emblem dancers, but they really made the dancers very fun to play. Like her. One of her special moves, her Musou attacks, is like she flies around everywhere. Like again, I haven't played Azura, so I don't know if Ty can correct me on this. But yeah, when you play as Olivia, she is a dancer, but she just flies. She like you thought like yeah, Camilla, Pegasus Knights were crazy enough. Please try out Olivia. She just dances the field literally from her dual blade. Like I think one of her specials is also like a. Dual blade spinning move, like a la Link. It's a really fun character to use. Olivia is definitely quite fun. I haven't unfortunately touched on Owain yet, just briefly, and he is yeah, he's the usual basic good combo breakers. Like I can't
He's
really tell at
Ryoma.
least.
Combo breaker.
Again, I haven't tried out Realm, so I have no idea. So I gotta progress through the main yes, but Owain he's pretty good. He's pretty good to try out, but. Now, if I had to say which one is the best character out of the bunch so far, surprise, surprise, it's actually Owain. Because I'm not sure anyone here has spoiled themselves already on the conversations, but Owain, Kaiji Tang's performance is. Kaiji, if you're listening to this thing right now, you have earned so much respect from me for your performance. He is awesome, to say the least. Like his Chunibyo behavior, him talking to Uncle Crom. Yes, he literally calls him Uncle Crom,
Oh, nice.
talking to Ryoma about like your God Blade, your Thunder God Blade, which is not too far from the translation of Raijin-do, and also talking to Niall, talking to
Oh, no
Darja,
way. He has a
Camilla.
lot of
Like
supports. That's good because
he has
the
a lot of support, and his flamboyant personality, his Chunibyo personality, like Radiant Dawn, your embodiment of darkness, is just. Great acting from Kaiji Tang is just amazing.
Now,
So,
does Tharja and Olivia have many supports too? Because I know, I guess Owain might have had his stuff
I
done
spoiled
before.
myself on this, and yes, Olivia actually does some pretty has a good amount of combos. Last I check, she talks to yeah, naturally she talks to Owain, Darja, Xander actually talks to talks Olivia talks to Xander, and. Also, another one he Olivia talks to is Minerva.
Okay.
So yeah, new one. And Darja, well, I actually kind of teased this on my article as well. Darja does indeed talk to Camilla. You can only imagine how that crazy conversation would be. And I spoiled myself to it. It's
I seriously want to see that now. I will find the video that has them talking to each other because
it's
that's.
everything you hate about Camilla, just
Oh,
like
come on!
Corrin, Corrin, Corrin.
And then let me go. And then go. Tharja goes. Robin. Robin. Robin.
And that's the coming.
there is a very good pun of it. Like, are you doing some bird watching? Oh, I guess that means you're also doing some dragon watching. If you get the pun, you'll get the reference.
Yes, Will, you don't have to beat us over the head with it.
Oh, yeah. Darja also had talked to Lin. Just the conversations themselves, like. Each DLC that comes is just great fan service, but Owain definitely takes the cake right there. So if you do have Fire Emblem Warriors and you love the Fire Emblem series, definitely buy this DLC. I wholeheartedly recommend it. If you can get past the fact that it's a bit of a clone characters, you will enjoy this great piece of fan service. So I highly recommend getting this season pass.
Yeah, I haven't gotten to play. Like I said, I've been really, really busy. I haven't gotten to play pretty much anything. I want to jump into the Warriors DLC at some point, but I'm definitely disheartened because Owain, outside of his specials, which are awesome, where he like gives this long speech while he's doing his move in a very Owain-like fashion. he's a Ryoma clone, exactly. And I'm 99% sure that Tharja is a Robin clone, exactly. Olivia does look really, really fun. I don't know, like, watching her, she doesn't quite seem as great as, or as fun as Azura, but she seems close. She has, like, some cool wind moves.
Yes, yes.
So,
yes.
I'll jump into it and check it out. My Switch just gave me a little notification that it downloaded earlier this afternoon, so I'll have to jump in and give that a go. I was actually, like, replaying Shovel Knight Plague of Shadows this afternoon just for, like, an hour or so. It's just such a high-quality classic game, and I know King Knight Campaign comes out sometime this year, so I'm anxiously awaiting that, because Shovel Knight, definitely a must-own game if you haven't played it on other systems on your Switch. I think it's $20 on the eShop, or $25, but you get... at least, I think I played it for like 25 hours. So you get a lot of content for a pretty high quality, low price, high quality content. So definitely, you know, I've talked about this game for about a year now. I keep going back to it. It's definitely a tried and true classic that you really can't be missed if you like platformers.
Yeah, not wrong with that. And yeah, King's Knight, I know it's coming out this year, and then that's the final Shovel Knight content.
Yeah.
So, well, I mean, for being honest here, until Shovel Knight shows up in Smash Brothers, and then we'll have infinite Shovel Knight content.
I think Shovel Knight will be in Smash Brothers. I really do. I think Shovel Knight will. He has a easy moveset built in. He's pretty iconic at this point, and he fits the Smash mold. I would be pretty surprised if they didn't, because, you know, indies are such a big deal for the Switch these days that it would make sense that they put in one of the ultimate indies in Smash.
And again, he already has an amiibo.
Right, exactly. He's got the amiibo already set.
And yeah, that's kind of one thing as well. Because, like, remember the announcement we had for the other pack Shovel Knight amiibo with Plague Knight, King's Knight, and Spectre Knight? Those things haven't been came out yet.
Right. Yeah, I don't think it is.
So that's kind of the one thing that's, like, really strange. They announced that, like, supposed the placeholder date was at the end of last year, and yet we still have no release date yet. So, yeah, Click Games, you don't have any details, please. So, yeah.
Yeah, I agree. We need to get some word on it. But I think that if we're talking, like, all third-party characters that should be in Smash Bros., Shovel Knight's got to be at top two. Like, and I'm not talking like returning characters, because that's another story time. I'm only talking like new additions that should totally be in the game. Shovel Knight's gotta be near the top.
Yeah, absolutely. Right.
And if for no other reason than last week when we talked about the top 10 best-selling indie games, Shovel Knight was number 10. So that shows how much the Switch owners wanted to get their Shovel Knight on. So
Switch owners, previous Wii U owners, it did very well on the launch.
You could say that they digged it.
Geez, don't need to knock us over the shovel of it.
Oh, wow. Oh my gosh. Well, I think we should get these jokes spayed and neutered. Let's move on. Alright, despite it being a kind of a lighter week, we do have some rather interesting little odds and ends in regards to news. So, it's time to go down the warp pipe. Okay, easily the biggest thing this week was that the Nintendo Switch Update 5.0 came out.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, it did certain things and, you know, yada yada good stuff, blah blah blah. But it had an unintended side effect. Okay, so as you know, as any true gamer knows, while it's true that the console, the controllers, the games you can get are more or less made by those people, you know, the first party people, the true publishers, you know, Microsoft, Sony, Nintendo, there are plenty of good third party people who make just as good controllers that work with the console. Okay, you know, pro controllers, you know, docks and everything. Well, there's been a rash of problems ever since 5.0 came out for the Switch, and if you have a third-party dock and try to use your Switch on it, you may not be using your Switch for very much longer. Yeah. Because apparently there is a deep not there, defect. There is a defect now with the 5.0 update that makes it so that if you use a third-party dock for your Switch will short-circuit. And as many people have already called it, it goes full brick. Because that's all it's useful for now, is a brick. Now, Nintendo does know about this, and their advice is basically don't use a third-party Switch dock.
Right, that's pretty much literally all that they said was, yeah, don't use their products,
yeah,
and this
much.
Won't happen.
Yeah, and to be clear, we're going to be completely clear on this. This is not like bootleg docks or anything. We're talking like Nico, you know, which is a very respected brand, and other well-respected third-party companies who have made these docks for the Switch. Because if you recall, the original Nintendo Switch docks would actually scratch your screen and, you know, various other things. So these docks were made to, you know, not let that happen.
I think that was that the screen scratching thing was like an isolated, perhaps even fake news thing. Like that just kind of disappeared without any update. Like Nintendo didn't release new docks or change their dock design. It was just like
right.
Yeah,
that when the Switch first came released it. Yeah.
All right, stand by the Switch dock is solid, but the price is really where the issue is.
Yeah, and so the reasoning that this is fascinating. Someone actually did research on this because they're thinking, well, why did this happen? You know, and so apparently, the USB dock the USB port that the Switch dock uses, what's called a Type-C power supply. Because of that, it is not USB D spec compliant, which is what a lot of other devices use. So, basically, if you put a Type-C with, you know, the PD version, you get bricks. And, yeah, that's not good, and people are really mad and everything. And you know, and the question is, why did Nintendo choose this particular one if they knew that the third party people might be using the other one, and that makes them think that it looks like they're money grubbers, you know, making sure that they only buy the Nintendo products, and we don't really know. I just want to say that I come off looking like a genius because I don't use my dock at all.
Yeah, I mean, I think that Nintendo definitely, I don't think they did it on purpose, obviously, to where they make it, oh, this will only work on the Switch. I'm sure it was a coincidental thing. But the real problem where they're completely wrong is the fact that it costs $90 for the mm-hmm. Switch dock. That is not $90 worth of technology into that dock. Like, you can get the third-party docks for like $30, and you know they're turning a profit on it too. So Nintendo needs to lower their prices on their docks. Like that's honestly, they want to just be blame free in this because yeah, it's not their docks and you're buying a dock that's not from them, and you know that it's automatically a risk because they're not testing third party docks and whatever. The fact of the matter is, people want docks by all their TVs. I mean, I have a TV in my apartment, our main living room TV, where it's mounted and the HDMI port is in the back. And it's a pain to plug in that HDMI TV, like kind of is shaped in the way it hangs. I'll sit there for 5 minutes sometimes trying to get the stupid cord to go into the TV when I unplug it. It'd be so much easier if I had just had two different docks in two different rooms and I never had to unplug it. So there, you know, you got a ton of situations like that. But at the end of the day, $90 is too much to ask. So if you want that convenience, you look for these third party docks that are, you know, $30 or $40.
Right, discounted, yes.
Yeah. So it's, you know, the consumer is kind of being held over the fire here and left out to dry by Nintendo from the price, like just from pricing. I mean, again, the Switch dock is quality, but it's not nine. That's more than your Pro Controller, and your Pro Controller is infinitely more technologically advanced and costly to make than the Switch dock. It's
an and average. I believe they also just released. I believe they announced it as well. They cut down the price of the Pro Controller now as well.
They did. They cut $10 off of it. So I think it's. I mean, it's still $70. It's a pretty penny, but it's a great controller, and it's definitely worth every cent. Meanwhile, you know, you can't easily replicate it. Meanwhile, a dock which can easily be replicated, and you're seeing the prices at a third of what they charge you for Nintendo. That's just Nintendo being greedy and kind of just raking their consumers over the coals.
Yeah, that's definitely one thing I can't help, but also definitely that people definitely can't help but think about, like, $90 for a dock to put in for HDMI cable for your Switch is like, Is it really that convoluted? Is it really that complicated piece of equipment that really justifies the price of $90? It's, yeah. Like, I bought Nico stuff before for my Wii, my Nintendo Wii, from its rechargeable batteries, and yeah, I actually like them, but they had been just like granted to some things that kind of is faulty, unfortunately, with Nico. And yeah, just thinking about like, yeah, people want discounts, we want to save money. I mean, again, we're not made of literal money unless like on a, you're making like six-figure salaries.
Nope.
So unless we are like really raking it, like, yeah, we want to save money. So yeah, we'll definitely try to go get our discounts, go to thrift stores, get something used just to help save us a pretty penny. And $90, yeah, that is a big penny, especially if you want to like hook your Switch unit to the TV. It's like, yeah, unless if you can really like, I don't know, I feel like even $60 is kind of justified. It's like the same value of a game. I think that probably be a bit more justifiable. But yeah, just quickly going back to the story of like the third party docs being breaking system, is just, yeah, just be wary. Customers, if you are a wary customer, definitely be wary of what third parties you support. Nico has been definitely one of the good, better companies, but again, there is that chance of a risk. And I believe, like last I checked on the reports right now, Nintendo is aware of the problem, and they're currently trying to resolve this problem right now, I believe.
I don't know about that, but
yeah, I don't think so. They basically said, like what, you know, what Todd said in the beginning, their statement was, yeah, we don't test those, so buy ours.
I wouldn't expect them to test it, to be honest, because I mean,
no, I wouldn't either. I wouldn't either. So. I think that the price is really where they're not to blame for the docks not working. They're to blame for making it so hard for you to get their first party dock.
Yeah, that if you wanna get a replacement, it's gonna dock you some cash.
Boom.
Oh,
and yeah, I actually remember like one witness account, because like, yeah, they reported this to Nintendo, and like they will do it as long as it's still naturally under warranty, which like, so if you're a recent purchase user, okay, that's great. But naturally, if there's any save data on it, and of course, you know, Nintendo, there's still no cloud server save data for Nintendo games. So yeah, if you get this thing fixed, unfortunately the save data is kaput. So yeah, be wary.
Yeah, so you may not have heard it here first, but we're warning you personally, just be careful, or, you know, be like this genius and only play in handheld mode. You'll never have to worry about it.
Ironically, the third-party charging ports that aren't docks are also having the same effect. So,
oh,
like,
there
your,
you go.
Your USB-C, you need your Nintendo Switch dock, you just don't need to play on it. You need it to charge at your charging station.
Well, I have the regular one straight from my Switch box, so I'm good either way. So, all right, moving on. This is a fun story. So obviously we've been thinking about Smash Brothers a lot the last few weeks for some odd reason. Not really sure why. And the big thing that we knew from the teaser trailer is that the Inklings from Splatoon are going to get the rightful place in the Smash Brothers roster. And one of the producers of the game had this massive interview about the DLC and everything. And they asked, Game Informer asked Hisashi Nagami what he thought about seeing the Inklings everywhere, because this is a, you know, still a very fresh franchise. You know, it's not that old, and now it's been in Mario Kart, it's gonna be in Smash Brothers. Like, what's that like for him? And he goes, seeing our characters get brought into Mario Kart or Smash Brothers is kind of self-affirming to us that we made some good choices with these characters. It's rewarding to see them accepted and grow stronger by their inclusion in these other franchises. And I'm like, yeah. I mean, these guys made arguably one of the coolest new franchises in the last couple of years of any platform. You know, it's one that anyone can get in. These characters are memorable. That's the thing, they're generic characters because you are the one customizing them. They don't have names outside of Inklings, and yet no one cares, because it's like, this is my Inkling, this is my Inkling, and yada, yada, yada. And so that is cool that he made, you know, the team made the right choice. Again, they were almost rabbits. Going back to last week's topic, these guys are almost rabbits, you know? And there were these bricks of ink called tofu. And like, okay. Oh, it's really, it's what they called it. They called it tofu. And so yeah, I'm happy for this team that they are getting to see this very recent creation get to be in these epic franchises that everyone associates with. And of course, Splatoon 2 is one of the highest selling games on the Switch right now, so they deserve all this.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I saw, I think it was on GameSpot's Twitter feed, they had everybody's doing their like March Madness, but with other topics in there. So they did Sega versus Nintendo, like bracket. But so they had Nintendo on one side and Sega on the other. And a lot of people in the comments had Splatoon going all the way out as their number one favorite Nintendo franchise. Now, I mean, I think that's kind of crazy, but it's
all relative.
Yeah, exactly. It's, you know, completely up to your preference. But
if they had put, let's see, Sega one side. Let's see, I would have Sonic. I have him going out in the first round to Pikmin. No, I'm kidding.
I think I would have Sonic and Sonic All-Stars Racing. Oh, here it is. Actually, I found it. So they had. Splatoon like they paired them poorly. I think they wanted the
That happens in all these brackets. That's just the way the brackets work.
They wanted the underdog seeds to have a better chance. So Splatoon had to beat Wii Sports first. Beats that, of course.
Okay, that I'm sorry. That's actually kind of tough because Wii Sports was what sold everyone on the Wii. Okay,
but if you could only play one,
I guess it would be Splatoon. It would be Splatoon.
Yeah, then it has to play Punch Out or Arms, which Punch Out.
Punch Out.
Generally.
Wait a minute, you went against your greatest game of all time?
I did. I had it going out to punch you out in the first round.
Next.
Then it would have to play either Super Smash, Mario Kart, Metroid, or Star Fox. So there you get your big hitters there. I mean, Smash definitely would win for me, but Mario Kart is a great choice. And so is Metroid and Star Fox.
Of course. Probably go Star Fox, actually, over Metroid.
Over Metroid?
Yeah.
And then Mario Kart over Smash Bros. Over Mario Kart?
No, Smash Bros. All the way.
Smash Brothers.
Smash Brothers.
So Smash Brothers versus Star Fox?
Smash Brothers.
Smash Brothers.
Smash Brothers versus Splatoon.
Smash Brothers.
Smash Brothers. Yeah.
So that was your bottom bracket. And then the top one was pretty cool, too. Obviously, Fire Emblem would come out of the top. But the outrage is they had Mario and Zelda playing each other in the first round.
Wow, Zelda.
Yeah. I think I went Zelda too. It was close. It's really close. It's a mood thing, but
it's very much a mood thing.
Doesn't matter. Donkey Kong's knocking out whoever wins that next.
Oh gosh, no.
And then Fire Emblem knocks out whoever wins that.
Okay, I'm gonna ask honestly, who did they pair Fire Emblem up against? I gotta ask.
Advanced Wars.
Oh gosh, Fire Emblem. I am close. What's the next round? Come on, give me a better challenge.
Pokemon or Fire Emblem. That's a real challenge.
That's a challenge. That's a challenge. I will push.
No. You have to pick one.
I would pick Fire Emblem.
Yeah, me too.
Barely. I want to say that for the record. Barely, because I love Pokemon.
Okay, Fire Emblem or Smash Bros. This is impossible for me.
That is impossible. That is impossible. Because there's Fire Emblem characters in Smash Brothers.
Yeah, that's true. Will, you said Smash really easy. I'm surprised by that.
Again, I'm not the hardcore elite.
He's not
elite.
Us.
No, I know. I didn't know we were like Smash that much.
Again, I'm not the OG Fire Emblem fan, so I can't say I have that fandom behind me. So, and Smash, again, I grew up since the original N64 days. Yeah.
I would pick Fire Emblem, but literally by the blue hair of Ike. Because while I can play Ike in Smash Brothers, I can experience.
Right.
Ike and Path of Radiance and Radiant Dawn.
That's what it comes down to.
That's what it comes down to. All right, let's move on. But I like that bracket. What we should do is we should seriously fill those out ourselves and reveal our picks for next week.
Yeah, we should.
So put it in our Slack chat and we'll get that going. All right, moving on. Here's a fun story. This past Sunday was the birthday of the one and only Reggie Fils-Aimé. So he's only 27. Didn't know that. No. Well, hey, his body is ready, so why can't he?
He
be
does
27?
Look pretty young. Like
he does look pretty young. He's actually 57.
Defense. Yeah, I figured he's like
Reggie is a classic part of Nintendo. I mean, I when I wrote the article, I was like, every publisher has those faces, you know, like Microsoft's got Phil Spencer, Sony had Kaz Hirai, and then what was his name? Kevin Butler. There we go. When the PS3 was going, that was a big thing. But for Nintendo, they've always had Shigeru Miyamoto, Mr. Iwata, rest in peace, and then ever since 2004, Reggie's always been there. He's like, he's Regifisime, I'm all about kicking ass and taking names, you know, and all that stuff. And ever since then, he's been a key part of what Nintendo does as not just a company, but as a marketing strategy. Reggie is everywhere. So, I mean, if you don't know who he is, what's wrong with you? So,
Like Reggie is like as again while the late Iwata was still alive, like he was pretty much one part of the Triforce of Nintendo, the Triforce of Nintendo.
Yes.
And ever since he made his first appearance, including when he announced it, I believe the first iteration of Twilight Princess for the GameCube back in the day. Yeah, that thing was also pretty much amazing. And like the way he just kind of holds himself, he presents himself. Of course, there is that whole like CEO speak. Like he does not give you a straight answer. Like we at Nintendo do this and then that. He never gives you a straight answer. He just teases you, like just enough to like get the motivation hype running.
And then he'll turn around and he'll do that Mii commercial where he fought Mr. Iwata, you know, for Smash Brothers. Remember that?
That was
legendary. And he does that. And then one day he'll say, we have a big announcement and it's Wii Music. And then he'll go to the Game Awards and go, wait a minute, you only thought we were bringing a port of Bayonetta? That really, you thought I was only here? You think I walked all the way up here just for that? You know, it's
right. Right. Right, and including when he announced the Cloud, we have one final trailer. Jeez Louise, that hint.
My favorite Reggie moment is definitely E3 2014 with Smash, where him and Iwata were throwing down.
Yeah, that was great.
In the intro for the introduction of Mii Fighters. Phenomenal stuff.
He is one of a kind. He is Regifisime. The Robot Chicken commercial.
Oh, that was great, too.
That was naturally great. It's like, and you thought we wouldn't have another Star Fox game. That's not my problem, you know. And then he burns the... It's like, what about Mother 3? How about this instead, Firefly? It's like, that's hilarious. Oh, my gosh. And, you know, he acknowledges the things that get thrown at him. Like, he gets asked about Mother 3 all the time. And I remember one time he goes, here I thought I would have one day without being asked about Mother 3. Yeah. We love you, Reggie, and we hope you stick around for a long time. We look forward to seeing you at E3 2018. So we hope you had a great birthday. Moving on, Xenoblade Chronicles 2 is going to be getting another update tomorrow, 1.3.1. If you recall, update 1.3 has had many, many problems, and they're hoping that this patch will fix everything, which is good because I've been wanting to play this thing. But ever since the Game Plus mode came out, I've heard nothing but bad news. I am not risking my save data.
Right.
I worked too dang hard to beat this game so I could review it for the site. Hear that, Tyler? Review it for the site. Release the hounds! And I'm not losing this because I want to enjoy Game Plus mode. So fix this, Nintendo. I want to play this again.
I give Kirby Star Allies an 8 out of 10. Okay, I did it.
brother, what am I going to do with you?
Pretty good game. It's a little too easy. Gosh. But, you know, great to play with friends.
Shut up, Tyler. All right, moving on to some big news. The Switch sales in Japan have officially passed 4 million, which is very impressive because if you recall, the console sales in Japan have kind of been declining over the last few generations because Japan's very much into the mobile market, the phone market, and all that stuff. And consoles, for whatever reason, just haven't sold there, even the ones that, you know, belong in that country. And yet the Switch is just defying all expectations again and, you know, blowing everyone's mind. And I can officially say this, I already know this for a fact, but half the people who own the Switch in Japan now are playing Splatoon 2.
Not surprising.
Yeah. Well, that game's... I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if there are like 2.5 million. It was 2.1 million at the beginning of the year. Okay? And so now we're in like the end of March, which is scary. And it's like now, okay, 4 million people. I want to know literally how many people in Japan are playing Splatoon 2.
If like... even the competitive scene of Splatoon 2 over there in Japan is anything else like, I don't know, a la StarCraft 2 or Overwatch.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that it's going to be quite high. I mean, Splatoon 2 is pretty hot. Again, we just recently had a concert back in February with Off the Hook and Callie and Marie. So I wouldn't be surprised if we'll continue with this theme as we head to the summer for the actual expansion.
Yeah, that's going to be big. I mean, that'll definitely continue to move the meter. Splatoon 2 is just such a juggernaut over there. It's definitely, I mean, it's big here, but it's just such a cultural thing there that it's transcended so many other franchises that have come before it, honestly.
It's one of a kind, that's for sure. And I remember I was reading that, I told you about the interview with the Splatoon producer, and he was talking about, you know, the content. He goes, we want to do something different, we want to do something special, and, you know, even a little dark with the whole, like, you know, they're in the subway system for the expansion, and, you know, it's just, it's impressive, you know, just how much Splatoon has grown. And with the Octo expansion, I have no doubt that's going to be a hit, if for no other reason, that everyone's going to want to play as an Octoling.
Right.
Oh, and I forgot to mention this. He did talk about the alleged connection between Off the Hook and Tupac and Biggie Smalls. He basically went, I don't know what you're talking about, but if you make that connection, go ahead. Yeah, sure. Wink. Yeah, I got you back, man. I got you back. So, but seriously, 4 million in Japan. That's very impressive, and again, we know it's already over 15 million. If they're at 4 million right now, then it's got to be closer to 16 to 17 by now. So,
I wouldn't be surprised if they met their approaching half the quarter by the middle of the year, honestly. So, hopefully, they will continue with the steam again with the actual expansion. And again, please give us some more new games to get hyped. I mean, again, we got Metro Prime 4, we got the Smash Bros. That's great and all that, but that steam going. Keep the hype train going.
I'm with you, Will. You know I'm with you, man. And it's very important because, as we found out, moving on, the Switch actually dropped to third in the NPD sales for the month of February. Now, if you recall, it was number one in January. So that's quite a drop in a month. Now, looking at it logically, you could attribute this to the releases of Monster Hunter World and Dragon Ball Z Fighters.
Yeah, it was in January, but it was at the end
but,
of tour.
But late January.
Right.
So if you didn't get it in those first few days, which you know that some people didn't, people, you know, bought up later on, and, you know, there was no doubt specials and sales and whatnot. And the only real big release in February for the Switch was Bayonetta. Which is not like, you know,
doesn't even count as a big release. It was big given that there was no other big releases.
Yeah, I mean, it's not even Kirby level, you know.
Yeah,
I mean, this
no.
is so now Bayonetta 3, that'll be something else, but yeah. So, but still, I was surprised that it dropped to third. I don't recall the last time that the Switch was third in sales.
Yeah, I think this is the first time. But overall, spending was way up for every console, and it's not, you know, the sky isn't falling. I would say, especially with, well, March will be interesting because PlayStation, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think there's any big PlayStation.
I'm kidding.
I don't think that there's any big PlayStation releases. Sea of Thieves was a pretty big deal, so Xbox might be on the rise, but
yeah,
Kirby Star Allies has sold really well, especially actually in Europe. It's been the number one.
Really?
Yeah, number one Kirby release in Europe. So we'll see how that does, like if that, you know,
you are
puts
right
the Switch back.
Yeah, you are right that Sea of Thieves is huge. Like, they've already reported that it's got 2 million players. So that could tip it in Xbox's favor. I'm not sure, though. But, yeah, Kirby, I'm glad to hear Kirby's doing well. I'd be very surprised that it wasn't a million seller. Okay, because, you know, it's Kirby. So,
yeah.
And, I mean, I'm pretty sure he sold a million copies on the Wii U. So there you go. So we'll see. But, yeah, I am very interested to see how March goes. And then... what's our April releases besides Labo?
South Park. Labo's obviously the biggest.
Oh, yeah. We have South Park. Oh, yeah.
The Fractured Butthole.
The Fractured Butthole. Shut up, Will. What are you doing? That's going to be... And then May, we have Donkey Kong and Hyrule Warriors, wasn't it? Was that
June? Deluxe Edition,
right. Hyrule Warriors, we got... Dark Souls, we got
Dark
Donkey
Souls,
Kong.
Donkey. That's going to be a big month.
And Mario Tennis. Wait, is Mario Tennis
No, Mario
June?
Tennis is June. I remember
June,
specifically
yeah.
this June. Isn't it like right before E3 or something?
Yeah, it is.
Okay, good. So, and then once that comes out, we can talk about actual games we care about.
I care about Mario Tennis Aces. That's going to be real good.
It's pretty much interesting enough to at least generate some buzz, to say the least. So, yeah.
I'm sure it's not going to raise too much of a racket.
The pause was a little too long on that one. I think we all kind of knew, like, we knew it was coming.
Oh, I wanted you to know it was coming. That was my plan. I wanted you to suffer until I said it.
Okay, please, can you stop serving us these puns? Come on.
Yeah, see, that was good. That was
no,
like,
you know why? Because puns are my ace in the hole.
This is totally your fault. You know that? This is totally your fault.
I think Will's one-upping you on this one.
Yeah, behold my backhand. Ugh. Moving on. Because as we all know, Will is out of bounds. Ha ha ha. So let's see what we got. Oh, yeah, Rocket League. Speaking of third-party games, Rocket League is going to be getting an update soon, which will update the visuals to 1280 to 720 quality, which is apparently good. And I mean, graphics, people. I mean, how good do we actually need them to be? I mean, clearly Rocket League is working well on Switch. It's been doing well enough. So, you know, I'm happy with that. But if you must have better graphics, fine. Just stop complaining. Let's see what else. Oh, yeah, this is a good one. The 2018 Video Game Hall of Fame has announced its entries, and there's some pretty surprising ones on here. I'm just going to go in alphabetical order. Got Asteroids, classic. Mm-hmm. The original Call of Duty, classic. Woo. Dance Dance Revolution.
Ah, I like that.
Yeah. Final Fantasy VII.
Nice.
Half-Life.
Of course.
Wait, of course. Does this mean Half-Life 3 confirmed? Kidding. John Madden Football.
Okay.
King's Quest.
Okay.
Metroid.
Yeah.
Metroid.
The original Metroid. Minecraft. Miss Pac-Man.
Miss Pac-Man is the best Pac-Man by far.
Miss Pac-Man, yeah, that's great. Space War, which has an exclamation point for some reason. And the original Tomb Raider.
Okay.
You know, I mean, I will agree with a lot of these. I'm not sure why Minecraft is in there so soon.
I agree.
Cultural impact, yes. But this is a Hall of Fame. There should be like a age limit. I mean,
yes.
Come on.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely.
I mean, look at that. It got in the same year as Metroid. How is Metroid not already in Hall of Fame?
I don't know. And Metroid inspired like a whole new wave of games. The Metroid.
Metroid inspired Tomb Raider.
Yeah, exactly. So. You know, I'm glad Metroid got in. I mean, it definitely deserves it. But
I'm not sure about Minecraft.
I agree with you on that time constraint thing. Minecraft, eh.
I mean, again, nothing against Minecraft. It's one of the most successful
games
of all time,
but it
doesn't deserve it right now.
Right.
We all knew it would get in eventually, so just wait your gosh dang turn. So, I mean, again, Asteroids. Asteroids got in the same year as Minecraft. That's not right. And Miss Pac-Man. That's not right. Oh, Asteroids for Smash. Kidding. thinking about my rule that I mentioned last week about who can get into Smash Brothers or not, technically the Minecraft characters could get into Smash. Because Minecraft Minecraft's been on both Wii U, Switch, and 3DS.
Yes.
I'm just saying.
That would be a bad fit. I would be really upset.
I agree,
that would be
a bad fit, but I'm just saying, like, if we're gonna think of like out there third party characters, if we're gonna put Shovel Knight in there, which he deserves to be, we should think of some out there Smash Brothers characters, and Minecraft guy would definitely be one of them. So, how about an assist trophy?
At least an assist trophy, because I feel like Minecraft is kind of a bit much under representation on Microsoft's part, because that's kind of like where it really boomed it. Granted, it was on PC, but again, Microsoft kind of stepped it up with it.
Oh, yeah,
so Minecraft as a playable character is just it just seems so unheard of. I mean, I'm not denying the possibility, but it's just so unheard of.
You would deny the possibility. Why, Will? Why? No. Are you trying to craft some kind of possibility to where you do not allow it to happen? This is mine to choose.
I mean, what would you name the character itself? I mean, heck, yeah, we even have Mii fighters, sure, but like, what the heck would you name the avatar of Minecraft? Call him Steve? I don't know.
You call him Minecraft Guy, just like you call it Doom Guy. Doom Guy doesn't have a name. He's Doom Guy. He's the gosh dang mother freaking Doom Guy. Yeah, I'm just kidding. I really don't want them. And I would rather have Shovel Knight and a bunch of other characters in Minecraft. I just thought it would be funny. Alright, with that, we're going to need the news statement, and we're going to head into our main event now. And, you know, the topic of, you know, video game stories has been a favorite of ours here on the Nintendo Entertainment Podcast, but what's a great story if you can't nail the ending? Okay? We've all seen movies, we've all seen TV shows, and we've all played video games that have had a great build-up, done a great job, kill the ending. Absolutely just ruined it. Mass Effect 3!
And also, I just want to say as well, I'm looking at you, Far Cry 5. I'm looking at you right now.
Wait, you've already beaten Far Cry 5?
I spoiled myself on the endings of Far Cry 5, and there's an argument I can say, which I can spend a long time, but
don't.
I'm not going to go into it right now.
And it's not a Nintendo game, so don't you dare. But no, like, we've all had those bad endings, but that also makes us appreciate the good endings. So we're going to look back at our favorite Nintendo game endings, as we enter the Temple of Time. Alright. Gentlemen, who would like to go first?
I went first last time, so I'll go after somebody this time.
Okay.
I guess I'll start it off.
Okay.
Like, because I've been more or less like going through the backlog of many of my Nintendo libraries. I mean, yeah, I could definitely say I was joking in the beginning of the Porta podcast. Like, yeah, I could definitely talk about Skies of Arcadia as my. Haven't I told you I love Skies of Arcadia?
And I love Sonic. Move on.
And yeah, I mean, if anybody has seen the ending of Skies of Arcadia, that was a great epilogue, but I wouldn't say it as necessarily as impactful. And I could probably go say Super Mario Galaxy because, yeah, Galaxy's ending was just one of the most, I don't know, I feel like it was definitely one of the great endings that really stood out from the part. But again, I'm staying out of my comfort zone. I'm going to go for a different choice. So this game, I really feel like, again, is like more or less a very hero base. Like, sure, it is very reminiscent of, I guess you can probably say, like Pixar films, like Disney films of the late, you can say. But like the way when you play through this game, it just like, this is what a hero should be.
What's like, the game? We'll stop building it up.
I think Ty will probably be maybe arguing against me on this, but I'm talking about the wonderful 101 for the Wii U.
Oh,
yeah, Hideki Kamiya. I couldn't get into that. I played the game and I didn't like it. I agreed with the critics that the gamepad was not precise enough.
Yeah, I couldn't get through it. I couldn't.
Oh, man. But if you actually get through, like, yeah, I know, grind and get through to the final end, especially when you face that the last boss. Oh my god, the last boss was definitely one of the best boss fights ever. Granted, it's a platinum game, but yeah, Hideki Kamiya, I gotta give props to him. Like, you thought Bayonetta, his work was great. Please definitely try out the wonderful one if you get a chance to, and really hoping if there'll be a Switch port hopefully in the near future. But and of course, naturally, we're talking about ending, so spoiler warnings here. Like, when you, like, again, you face up against Jirjenga, basically the planet eater who, more or less, the Geth jerk who leads the Geth jerk, but then your enemies become friends, you finally, like, go against Jirjenga, facing off this planet eater with, I think pretty much the avatar of Earth, the wonderful 101. Ah, man, what was the robot again? I forgot the robot's name, who's
just move on,
Luna's mom. That's, okay, fine. Okay, so basically, you beat Jirjenga, basically defeat him in all-star fashion with the theme song in hand. Like, you know, everyone here knows the theme song to Wonderful 101. Yes, that cheesy superhero theme song.
No, I just completely forgot. Please move on.
And then afterwards, like, then it just kind of hits us with the epilogue scene of like, hey, where's wonderful Red? Where's the rest of the cast? Like, and then you see Luna, the small kid who was like being a very brat, now finally manning up and actually is part of the wonderful 101. And after that, you just see like in a press fashion, like, you know how they print out newspapers like in that, like you see the world is safe once again, going through all these moments of when you face these levels, facing up these like tyrants, bosses, all these things, like a lot of like a newspaper headlines, like you a lot of, like think about like Superman, like see headlines of Superman, something similar to that. When you just see that credit just rolling, like this is a superhero game and you've literally faced it, a world eater, a giant alien who more or less wants to conquer the entire planet, and yet you conquer the odds literally with just 101 people. And just hearing, seeing the credits roll, that cheesy superhero music, I can see what Kamiya was really going for. It's like, again, it's a superhero theme. Like this is what it means to be a hero. Even if, like many people, you get beat down, like Rocky, like you still come back up from the odds from it. And I don't know, seeing that ending from the 1-for-101, just reliving that moments of a superhero's tale. I don't know, it never gets old. It really never gets old from a superhero's tale. It's like very reminiscent of Beautiful Joe of his previous works, but it's just an awesome game that. And I feel like that ending was definitely one of the more impactful ones. Maybe not as deep or philosophical, but it just gets that basic message that, like, no matter what you can do, you can still come back and become a hero. A very tried and true hero story, I feel.
Yeah, I think that Wonderful 101 kind of deserves another chance on Switch with Souls, because the art style was phenomenal. And I know Kamiya did not like the fact that people didn't like the gamepad controls, but I really found that it was tough to draw the shapes right. Yeah. Sometimes it wouldn't read the right shape. But the idea behind the game was really, really good. So I would hope that they're thinking about, I mean, it's been a rumor, right? I'm sure that they will bring it to Switch at some point. But yeah, the game definitely deserves another shot. And I think Wonder Red could end up in Smash Bros. He'd be a better fit than Bayonetta, that's for sure.
That's one thing I hope.
Don't push it. But yeah, that's a pretty interesting one. All right, Tyler, how about you?
Okay, so I have a couple different options here. I mean, I've told you about Earthbound. That's my number one ending. I won't go into that again.
That's fair.
It's fantastic. Fire Emblem Echoes Shadows of Valentia had a really, really good ending, too.
Love that ending.
Yeah, because like, Alm and Celica, you know, they save the day, and it's pretty epic. Final boss is great and all. And then afterwards, they have a nice little line in there that's like, because Alm and Celica basically, like, Alm's like, we have to believe in humanity. And Celica's like, no, humanity can't do it. We need gods. And, you know, you get Alm's side of the argument ends up winning out, and Celica becomes a believer. And there's a nice little line at the end that's like, and after Alm's reign, humanity's selfish nature took over again. And, like, you know, you're like, okay. Like,
wow.
Now I kind of see how Celica, you know, she had an interesting point.
It also just goes to show that if you don't have the right leader.
Right.
To guide you, you know, bringing you hope, then it's easy to fall into your own ways.
Exactly, and that's what Celica was preaching throughout the game. So that's a pretty good ending. But actually, I think perhaps not one of my all-time favorite Nintendo endings is actually another, like Will's, not a fantastic story game, but Yoshi's Island has an incredible ending. First of all, that was the game, perhaps the number one game of my childhood. There's Sonic, probably number one, but Yoshi's Island, top five. The Yoshi's Island theme song, beautiful. Anyway, you go through six worlds, you get to the last level, and every other last level you have dark blue Yoshi. And when you get green Yoshi jumping in to start the final Bowser's Castle level, it's like, oh man, we got classic green Yoshi, you know, he's coming in for the big finish. You go through the pretty epic plane chase where Kamek is flying behind you and you're doing Yoshi, you're in the helicopter form of Yoshi. You have to dodge Kamek. Then you got to go through all sorts of different trials. You get to choose which dangers you face depending on the doors that you go through in old school Mario style. Really an awesome build up to the final boss. And when you get into Bowser Jr.'s room, he's just like, you know, he's baby Bowser just chilling there, not intimidating at all. just wants to ride Yoshi. So he'll like, he starts off the fight by going for the ground pounder in the very beginning. If you don't move, you'll get got, so you got to run away right away. But then you have the scene that everybody knows where Kamek flies over Bowser Jr. and turns him into gigantic Bowser in the background. It's just demon looking Koopa all you can see is the yellows in his eyes and the red in his mouth when he breathes fire at you, and he slowly is creeping towards your platform, ready to knock you off. Nothing was more heart-pounding than the final moments of that game, because at the end, he bull rushes the mountain that you're on, and your platforms have pretty much been destroyed at that point, and you really only have one shot at the last hit, or else he's going to knock your platform over, and you're getting stomped. So definitely one of the most dramatic bosses in history, and I think it still holds up today as one of those kind of chill-inducing moments where baby Bowser, for a moment, turns into the menacing Bowser that we know and love years later. And then, of course, you see Baby Luigi and the stork flies you to your home, which is a great scene as well. It's definitely very peaceful and touching. It definitely has the nostalgic value that you look for in a lot of those classic, that you'd find in a lot of those classic Nintendo games. But yeah, that final boss and that whole final level truly is one of the all-time best. It captures the epicness in a game that really is kind of, you know, it's colorful and happy. It's a Yoshi game. The epicness is absolutely there, and the challenge is there too.
That's a good one. Now, see, for me, I could talk about Breath of the Wild's ending. But I haven't finished it.
I'm surprised you brought this up.
I could talk about Xenoblade Chronicles 2's ending, but some people haven't talked about that. So I'm gonna, ironically, when I was thinking about the games that I haven't honestly talked about, or at least haven't talked about at length, I can't help but go to Legend of Zelda, and not just Breath of the Wild, even because I actually finished it. But other ones, like the two that really stick out to me is Skyward Sword and Twilight Princess. And both of them are great, and I could talk about them loosely, but I've always liked Skyward Sword's ending because of Demise. Because you're wondering, how does this being that is totally Ganon but not Ganon become Ganon? Because it's like, I just killed you. How do you come back? And he goes, and that line about, I curse you. My hate will live on forever. You know, that was very chilling, and yet after that we had the very hopeful, you know, they're going down to Hyrule, where it's going to be Hyrule, and there's hope for the future, and yada, yada, yada. But then in contrast, you have Twilight Princess, and Twilight Princess is, there's a reason it's my favorite Zelda game beyond just Midna being in it, which, let's be honest, it's Midna, so yeah, that trumps most things. But, you know, they set it up perfectly. You know, Ganon comes, Saint dies, Ganon is back. Ganon is very powerful, and Midna basically sacrifices herself to save your sorry carcass. And they're like, oh my gosh, she just killed Midna. What do you do? Like, you know, she's full Forbidden Shadow, and Ganon, like, swats her away.
He gets trashed. I love that scene so much. That he's on his horse, crushing
it. And then he holds up the Forbidden Shadow and, like, crushes it, because that's Ganon. That's who Ganon is. And so, you know, you and Zelda have to team up. You're fighting on horseback. Then you do the epic sword duel, which I absolutely loved. And then, you know, you stab him right in the heart, and he's yelling, and the wind's, like, blowing. Oh, wait a minute, was that Wind Waker? Kidding. the wind is blowing. You know, there's a great final line. But he's, you know, he dies, and you're like, okay, we're good now. And then you go to the desert with the mirror, and Midna finally gets to be her true self, and she's absolutely stunning. And I love the line, she pokes fun, she breaks the fourth wall, what's wrong? Am I so beautiful that you can't talk? I was like, that's clever, go Nintendo. And then you see, like, you think, oh, I can see her again, you know, she's just in the Twilight Realm. And then her tear breaks the mirror. And you're like, no! You're like, she destroys the mirror to ensure that no one from her realm will ever hurt Link's realm, and it's terrible because you realize that she loves him. You know, suck it, Zelda.
okay. I don't know. I didn't get that. Like, she loves
him. Have you not seen Link's track record?
Okay, first of all, hold on. Back that up. Okay, Link is a player in Ocarina of Time. Okay, he has no fewer than 5 women fawning.
That's
for
the
him.
Thing. Like he's not actually a player. The women just
player.
Like him.
He's
like,
a player.
He doesn't even talk.
His track record.
He's expressive in his eyes, Tyler. He's expressive in his eyes. But no, Midna clearly loved him.
And, you know, yes, it started out as, you know, you're my pawn, I'm using it to get to Zan, blah, 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 blah. But as she saw the courage in him, she really did have feelings for him. And you could tell, she cried, and that's what broke the mirror, you know? They could have done anything else and wouldn't have meant the same, but they used her tear to break the mirror. And my heart broke. Because I'm like, again, I love Midna. She's one of my favorite characters of all time. But, and I think she was like my number one Nintendo waifu when we did that list. But, you know, that ending was tragic. It was, but in a good way. I mean, it's Shakespearean. There's a great term for it. It was Shakespearean because it was like, you have the victory. Midna is finally herself again. She has control of her realm. The two biggest threats to both realms are gone. And yet, to ensure that this doesn't happen again, she breaks the only way for you to see her again. And it's like, no! Don't do this to me, Midna!
Parting is such sweet sorrow.
Well said, Will. Well said. Now shut up. No, kidding. That was great. But, like, that's the thing. Like, sometimes endings can be touching and beautiful, like the Yoshi's Island ending, and they can be, you know, inspiring, like Wonderful 101. But then there's endings that need to happen, but you don't want to see it happen because it's tragic. And that was what Twilight Princess was for me. It was a beautifully tragic ending. And because we'll never know if Link ever got to see Midna again.
Right.
Outside
that time,
of his dreams,
right.
Of course.
And in Hyrule Warriors as a unlinked, not canon, but still she's there and Link is there.
Oh, that's uncanon. That's
true.
Uncanon.
That's true. But let's be honest, video games, you know, we could just interpret however we want.
But they're not the same. That's like, for example, there's proof of this. When Fi saw the Link in Hyrule Warriors, she goes, "You look like my master, but you're not my master." It's the same thing with Midna. You know,
that's
she
true.
Knows that's not her Link.
That's
so,
a good point.
Dang right, it's a good point. I made it.
I guess, again, the whole Hyrule situation and all that, yeah, that's kind of what Bamboozled with, yeah.
Zelda does have a lot of great endings. You said Wind Waker was one of my choices. I think I said that a couple
times.
Yeah, Wind
Waker
how
great,
great that ending is, but
yes.
That's one of the most epic for sure. I just love how Ganon is way too strong for Link, but he just gets that one lucky hit and it
bats him in the head.
Headshot.
Yeah, yes. It's great.
Can we just talk really quick about how Ganon dies like so brutally in so many of these games?
Yes, shout out to Ganon for getting back up after all these tough like
he gets. Yeah, he gets literally gets pulled apart. He gets chained apart. He gets more or less becomes a giant pig. He
gets
tossed around.
Lightning thrown at his face and just electrocuted while Link hacks at him.
Light arrows impaled through the chest, impaled through the head. You know, I think one time it was like magic dissection. You know, he's eternal, and that's why he did get away with this. But seriously, what the frick? I mean, they had a literal cartoon version of Link impale the guy through the head. Like, this is supposed to be cartoony, and they go for an anime-style ending. So, we're just saying here. Okay, we got a little time. How about one more round? One more round?
Yeah, why not?
Okay, I'll go first this time. Let's do this in reverse order. I'll go first. I know I've talked about it before, but I can't think enough of this ending. Paper Mario, 1,000-Year Door.
Of course.
That's good.
Because this game has so many endings in and of itself. And when I talk about like, multiple endings, but like right when you think you're done, no, you're not done even close. Because you got to fight Zexus of, what's that his name? Zexus?
Gradius.
Grotus. Grotus. I was thinking
the Exnauts.
Exnauts, right. But anyway, so you fight Grotus. And
first of all, hold on. I hate to interrupt you, but Black Panther stole the Exnauts greeting. I just realized that the Exnauts is the same as Wakanda forever, and my life has just changed upon that real.
Grotus forever. Okay, Tyler, that's your mission. Find a picture of the Exnauts doing that. Put it with Wakanda forever, and he goes, "You stole it."
Yep. Yeah, I'm gonna do that for real.
There you go. All right, and then we will retreat to high heaven. Who did it better? All right, anyway, so you go to Grotus. You gotta save Peach. You beat Grotus. You done, right? Wrong! Bowser shows up, and if you do not have 67 stars before you go into the Grotus battle, you are screwed, because you gotta face Bowser at full power, no healing. And then you go, okay, now I'm done. Now I can do it, right? Wrong! Because then you go in and you find out that the whole point of capturing Peach wasn't because of the map, it wasn't because of the stars, is because of the Queen of Darkness, who is the demon spirit beneath Oh crap, it's been so long.
Rougeport.
There we go. Rougeport. The demons on there, she needed a pure body, of course, to inhabit, and of course that's Peach. So, you know, then you gotta fight her. So then you go, you beat her down, then you're done. Right? Wrong! Because then she gets super more powerful and she strikes you down in one shot and you're like, what are you gonna do? And so they pull an original Paper Mario and they make it about the power of wishing and star power and friendship is magic and go Rainbow Dash and, you know, and all that stuff, and then you still have to defeat her at pretty much full power, and then only after that does everything fall into place, and then you get the very good RPG style ending of you see where everyone is going, and, you know, like Madame Fleury is doing stage plays, which is actually really cool, because they got Dupless doing the, you know, the transformation magic, which is a really clever touch. You know, Vivian is now in charge of the Shadow Furies, which is great because I love Vivian, even though somehow she was the Japanese version, but we're not gonna talk about that. Seriously, look it up, it's messed up. And then you see about Bobbery, you know, leading the Bot-Oms and all that. I love that kind of ending because, you know, everyone is happy. Everyone gets what they wanted, you know, except for the Shadow Queen, and Bowser, and the X-Knots, and, you know, anyway, but, you know, that's kind of makes me smile, because that game was so deep in story, and, you know, you cared about every single one of these characters, and then at the end, you got to see them all have their way, and, you know, have their day in the sun, and get their happy ending, and then, of course, Mario and Peach went back to the Mushroom Kingdom.
Except for Goombella. Goombella is alone. She's like, I love you, Mario. See, I actually think Vivian's story in the Japanese version is cool. It's completely unique compared to, Vivian loves Mario like everybody in the Paper Mario series. Like, her Japanese story is dope.
Don't you mean his Japanese story is dope?
Yes. But, yeah, I mean, I'm PC, so, you know.
Yeah. Anyway, but...
are you PC, bro?
What?
I said, are you PC, bro? It's PC principal from South Park.
Oh, I don't watch South Park, remember? But seriously, like, I love this game with all I have. And, like, the ending was really, really fun for me because it's just one of those special endings. And, you know, Mario, you always think, like, Mario has, like, very simple endings, where this was really complex. And you got to see Rougeport finally be free from the Shadow Queen and all that. And it really made me happy. So and of course, again, Thousand Year Door is one of my absolute favorite Nintendo games and video games of all time. So, yeah.
No, that's a great, I mean, I think the original Paper Mario had a similar thing where you get to see all the characters, and like Cooper is like on an expedition with Colorado.
Yes. Yeah. And epilogue, the epilogue.
Yeah, scene,
epilogue.
Yeah,
and Paracarry's delivering all the letters. That's a really good ending. Actually, think about Super Paper Mario had a great ending also.
Yes. I love that Super Paper Mario. Yes.
Yeah, that story was fantastic.
Yeah, it was better than I think people gave it credit for. You know, especially with, you know, with Tippy Timpani and, you know, Lord Black. You know, that was really good.
Yeah,
that was the last great Paper Mario game.
I agree. It was a really good game. People don't like that one as much because it was the first to change the formula. But I thought, for what it was, it was a really great game, and it still had that Paper Mario charm to me, even though really it stylistically was totally different. I don't know how it maintained the charm, but it did. I'm going to go with another not like super deep ending and go Donkey Kong 64 has a really cool ending. So like the whole game, like you're doing great DK things, you're collecting bananas and you're beating up gigantic bosses, and the final boss battle, you got to rewind a little bit, I guess, and talk about the Blast-O-Matic, when you have to turn off the Blast-O-Matic in K. Rules Keep and you're on the timer, because if you don't do it, the Blast-O-Matic will blow up DK Isle. All the blueprints that you gain will give you an extra minute to deactivate the Blast-O-Matic. It's a high pressure, not really. If you have more than 10 blueprint, you probably do it in like 20 minutes and they give you 50, but at least when you see the timer, you feel like there's pressure. And K. Rool escapes. Clumsy knocks him over, and his giant like escape chopper crashes on DK Isle, and you have to go into his arena or into the plane, thinking, okay, like what's going to be in here? Like, Okay, Rule, you fought him on a ship, you fought him in an underground laboratory, you fought him in an airship before. What's it going to be like? You land in it, and it's a boxing arena.
it's a boxing match.
Where K. Rool is like, it descends from the bleachers, and it's like, you know, the crowd's all behind K. Rool because it's, they're all Kremlings. So they have like, they're in the red corner. Donkey Kong, and the Kremlings are like boo.
right, then in the blue
corner, King K. Rool.
He descends
on a rope, like waving to the crowd, thank you, in a boxing leotard.
the most random
boss of all time, but it's fantastic. Each round, DK, each Kong knocks them out one at a time, but the Kremlings are the judges, so they always rig it until their bell breaks, and they can no longer ring the bell to save K. Rool when he gets knocked out. You think you'd finish with Donkey Kong, but you don't. It's Chunky who lands the finishing blow. Giant Chunky, K. Rool charges at him, and he's invisible and zigzagging, and you gotta time the punch right. He knocks him back, knocks him out. And Chunky's like turning around celebrating his victory when K. Rool's eye opens again, his bloodshot eye. So he's getting ready to charge, and Candy Kong like comes and distracts him with her feminine charm, and Funky shoots a boot at him and launches him out of the thing. That whole boss is just, it's one of the strangest like tone shifts. I mean, I guess not really tone shifts, like, it kind of is. I mean, every boss before that is pretty menacing. You got the giant fire boss that you fight on a falling platform.
Oh, man, that second boss was really... I don't know. I feel like that was a scary boss, honestly.
It was. Back in the day, that was horrifying. I agree 100%. I was especially when you fight him as Chunky, and like the platform that you're on is slowly falling into lava, and you have to beat him before the platform sinks into lava.
I still remember the first boss, the armadillo, that when it was a dark and stormy and he's shooting cannons. I thought that was a scary boss when I was a kid.
Yeah, how about the giant Jack in the Box? Like that.
Oh my god, that is nightmare fuel.
Yeah.
That is nightmare fuel.
Yeah, those bosses are so creepy. And then K. Rool, who's kind of creepy in the other games, and really in Donkey Kong 64 and all the cutscenes, he's like super, really scary. And then his final boss fight, he's like this like clown in a giant blue leotard, like getting ready to box with you. You have to like shoot his toes with Tiny because she can go real, she can shrink her size to suit her mood. Dixie or Diddy will fly real high with his jetpack on and blast down the lights on
spotlight,
his head.
Yeah, spotlight, yes.
And then he fights with the spotlight on his head against Lanky. You got to play the trombone and get him to slip on banana peel. It's such a creative boss in all of its phases. It's pretty difficult unless you until you play the game enough, you can beat him pretty easily. But he's pretty challenging. And in between rounds, you have 3 minutes to knock him out. If you don't knock him out, Cranky will like talk you up. Like you go back to your corner and Cranky will give you some motivation. A really, really interesting boss battle that stands out as one of the best in Nintendo's history. Not only because it's so funny and just out there, but also because it's really creative how each character uses their different abilities in really strange ways. It kind of creates a nice narrative for the fight. Probably the best N64 ending in my opinion. It's really, really good. Donkey Kong Country 2 has a great ending too, actually. But 64 definitely ranks at the top of the list.
It's just kind of like, I'm really sad now because like that's the one genius about Rare games. Like, even if from Donkey Kong 64 to their other creations like GoldenEye or even Perfect Dark, Banjo-Kazooie, those things have always been like a unique ending to say the least. Like they were so off the wall, it's like you can't help but remember them. That's like that's a Rare game.
Banjo-Kazooie's ending is awesome. Banjo-Kazooie ending where you fight Grunty, again, it's another like multiple phase boss where your abilities are put to the test in a really interesting way. Then you got Grunty's Furnace Fun. That's a classic too. Like N64 Rare games are just phenomenal. I mean, Rare's one of the best. I can't believe it's so sad to see them reduced to Sea of Thieves these days. But
Hey, hold on. Don't say that. That's not fair.
I'm going to take that shot.
They chose to make that game, and they wanted to make that game. They wanted to do something different. Now, to be clear, the people who made Banjo-Kazooie and whatever, they're now in Playtonic. It's not even the same team anymore.
That's what I'm saying. That's why it's sad. The Rare logo used to like be like, this game is amazing.
It meant something.
Right, it meant something. And now it's like, it means Kinect Sports and a game that doesn't seem like pretty average reviews for Sea of Thieves for like a really well built up.
It's really
game.
Hollow. It's basically very hollow.
Yeah, yeah. So it's so sad to see them have so many classics in the 90s and now they just don't. Stupid Microsoft.
Okay, so since we're running out of time, I'll make mine a little bit quick. And I'm guessing for this one, I'm going to go for a much more recent entry. And yeah, I'm going to go back to my good old tried and true Mario game. And yeah, we talked about Thousand Year Door. We talked about Super Mario. But I'm going to go for the last recent great entry, which is Super Mario Odyssey. And I think everyone knows about this ending, really, to say the least. Like, again, you face off against Bowser in that boxing ring with your hat. I don't know. Like, that boxing match against Bowser, sure, many people say it's very easy, but again, you face off against Bowser in a boxing match, to say the least, using a giant hat. And then afterwards, like, again, the world comes crumbling down, and then you actually take control of Bowser.
That was so cool. I love that.
That was, like, never would have thought in the 30-year history of Mario, you ever actually could take control of Bowser and escape from the moon. Like, you thought Sonic had to escape from the city. No, Mario, you have to escape from the moon. So,
to the moon, Mario! To the moon!
And then, like, I just gotta say as well, did you get a whole Sonic vibe when you were escaping from the moon in
Super
Mario Odyssey?
Absolutely.
Like, many people, when you hear that song, like, this is so Sonic!
It was. The song was really Sonic. I liked the song. It was really Sonic.
Yeah, like crashed face, let her run away. It's like, it is so Sonic. Funny enough, I believe it was the same voice actress who did Tails last I checked.
Oh, no
way. Yeah, I believe. But don't quote me on that. But yeah, like, again, you rush through the debris coming down on you. Sonic's, like, that Sonic-esque music just, like, it really does pump you up. You're going to, like, just escape from the moon, and then you see, like, Bowser's face, but with Mario's influence on it. It's just, like, it's so hilarious. Like, I am Godzilla, hear me roar. Instead, I am Bowser, I'm having Peach on my shoulder. It's like, wow. Like, that magic of just, it's just, that's, you know, that's a Nintendo game. Like, it could still have that magic of the innocence of Mario, but it's just, it's so cool. And then that ending, like, again, like, that tease at the end, like, oh, is Mario finally gonna get that kiss that we've been waiting for all these years? And, nope! Like, okay, Bowser jumps in, like, ah! No, here, take me, Nick. And then Peach lays down her foot, like, no! And then just, like, leaves, like,
that was a good impression.
Like, what the heck just happened? And it's like, okay, Cappy, escort me. Like, ugh, Bowser, it's all right. Hey, come on, guys! It's like, wait for me! And then after that, just cuts the credit. That was like, Mario games just has that flair, as you said. Like, the Mario games definitely have that charm from the Paper Mario games to Super Paper Mario. Any Mario game, to say the least, it just has that certain charm and that humor / charm / all around fun. That great mood, you know, in the Mario game. And Mario Odyssey, I gotta say, they really capture all, like, that magic from, even from the first game to Odyssey. It's just, yeah, that's an ending you definitely won't ever forget, to say the least. And
the Bowser and Mario comforting Bowser is, like, the funniest thing. Because, like, they've chased each other across the globe.
And beyond.
And beyond
the moon!
They just finished this ridiculous, like, extreme kill or be killed fight, and then they both get rejected. Mario's just patting him on the shell. Bowser,
yeah.
Oh, it's definitely hilarious. At first, I didn't like the idea of having Peach, like, reject Mario.
Yeah, I kind of have bad feelings about that too, because it's like, I like the irony of it, especially since, you know, he's decked out in a suit because Cappy and all that, and, you know, I don't know. I mean, after all that Mario's done, to just have her reject him like that, I mean, seriously. I don't know. I mean, like, how did Link say it? Oh yeah, excuse me, princess.
right. I mean, heck, even Mayor Pauline gave us a festival celebrating our
right.
And that's why Pauline is better than Peach. I said it. I don't care.
Okay, hold on. Rank the princesses. I mean, I go Rosalina 1. Pauline, or Daisy 2, Pauline 3, Peach 4, but I love them
you
all.
You put Pauline below Daisy? We don't even know who Daisy is!
Daisy's awesome.
Ugh. Daisy's awesome! I admit it. I like Daisy.
Thank you, Will.
I swear, your guys' responses are making me jump up,
superstar. Hello, have you not seen Daisy in Super Strikers Charge?
That's
have you seen her?
Yep. Uh-huh.
Hot stuff, baby.
Gosh. Okay, we're gonna end this here. This is... All right.
Speaking of which, I hope there's Super Mario Strikers Charge coming soon.
Yeah, me too. Also, anyway, Daisy's the best player in Mario Tennis for N64.
Whatever.
Like Baby Mario.
Whatever. All right, with that, we're going to end this episode of the Nintendo Entertainment Podcast. Let us know what are your favorite Nintendo video game endings. And on that note, Tyler, poll question.
Yes, so last week we asked you, what do you want to see Nintendo focused on most at E3? And 10% of you said a brand new IP, 20% said return of an old IP, 40% said all things Smash Bros., which was the highest number, and 30% said a draw-dropping surprise. So Smash Bros. Is a... the dominant force. I mean, not really surprising.
No one.
Yeah.
All right. So this week's poll question. Let's just take it right from this topic. What was your favorite Nintendo ending? Was it? Or sorry, no. What is the better Nintendo ending? Twilight Princess, Wonderful 101, or Yoshi's Island?
How about we generalize it a little bit more?
Okay,
because...
fine. What series have the best?
Yeah,
endings?
There we go. Like
Mario. Okay.
Zelda or Fire Emblem?
Yeah, that sounds
okay. That was good. I'll take that one. Yeah.
I mean, is there another franchise we should add to this? I really don't think there is. Maybe Pokemon, maybe.
Yeah, Pokemon. Let's do Pokemon.
Okay,
do Pokemon.
Mario, Zelda, Fire Emblem, Pokemon. Those are more or less story driven. So yeah. Well, let us know which of those series you think has the best endings. And of course, if you have a specific one, like you know, it's like Skies of Arcadia or Bayonetta, or I don't know, Star Fox. Or whatnot. Or, oh my gosh, Star Fox Command with its, like, 20 endings.
That was great.
Oh,
yes, half of them are heartbreaking. Yes. It's just, like, the frick,
and
dude.
Star Fox retired. And Star Wolf became the new hero, beloved by...
Yeah, loved by all. And then after saving the universe, Crystal dumps him again and goes, I'm going back to Panther, you bitch! So, Or like the one where Slippy gets married, you know, that wasn't too bad. And then, and then Fox and Falco become like racing pilots.
They join F-Zero.
They join F-Zero. Oh my gosh, there's a crossover for you. Star Fox, F-Zero, Star Zero.
Yeah, they need that. They actually need to do that.
That's totally good. I want that. Make it happen, Nintendo. Or hire us, and we'll make it happen. We're just saying. But anyway, let us know about your favorite Nintendo endings. Let us know what you think about, you know, the... Have you been affected by the third-party docs shorting out the Switches? Let us know. Did you wish Reggie a happy birthday? Please say you did. Switch is selling in Japan, the NPD results. What did you think about the Video Game Hall of Fame? Let us know all that, and we will see you next week. So, for Tellius Tyler and Wario Will, I am Triforce Todd, and ladies and gentlemen, we are out of time. We are not out of lives. We have made it to the end of the level. So, raise the flag.